gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
the thrilling adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
the Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Superman Vidcast,
the world's best podcast,
and
Radio KAL from SupermanHomepage.com,
as well as the audio dramas Superman, Last Son of Krypton, and Supergirl, Last Daughter of Krypton from Pendant Audio Productions. Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Eunice, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
This is the Superman Fan Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Hogan. Put on your indestructible cape and join me as together we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. This is episode number 214, the Superman Family comic book, cover dated April 1957. Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 20 for the week of Wednesday, January 18th, 2012, which is when I'm recording this, in the morning. I'm in the middle of working all week long to help cover for a co-worker's vacation. And I know I'm not going to be able to finish recording this before I have to leave for work after lunch this afternoon. I might have been able to get it recorded, but I had to take my sister to her quarterly doctor's appointment. And since I really have no important news of a personal nature to share, after a couple of promos for some podcasts, we'll begin our look at Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 20.
Look, up in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
No, it's SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. SupermanHomepage.com, covering the world of Superman from the 1930s to today. News, reviews, rumors, and reports. SupermanHomepage.com for all your Superman comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, radio shows, and more. Everything you ever wanted to know about the man of Steel and more. SupermanHomepage.com.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. No. It's not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view!
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face. Heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit. And opinions...
He likes it! Hey, Mikey!
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson...
J. David Weider.
And...
Michael Kaiser.
Take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right, or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around,
Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
In the depths of space rests a planet. A planet as of yet unknown to humankind. A planet of peace and prosperity. A planet that gave us its last family. And yet no one has devoted a podcast to that family.
Welcome to the Superman Family Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Pinkham, and every other week I will cover two Superman Family-related comics, one from the past, pre-2006, and one from the present, post-2006, along with all your favorite Superman news and much, much more. Join me for some family fun, won't you?
Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen, number 20, the April 1957 issue, was published around February 21st of that year, which was my late grandmother's 47th birthday, so happy birthday, Grandma. It was it contained 32 pages for the cover price of 10 cents. The editor was Mort Weisinger, and the cover was penciled by Kurt Swan and inked by Stan Kay. And it illustrated the third and final story of this issue, but more about the cover when we get to that final story. All three 8-page stories were done by the same creative team, writer Otto Binder, penciler Kurt Swan, and inker Ray Burnley. And all three stories have also been reprinted in Showcase Presents Superman Family, Volume 1. And since we're just covering one issue of a comic book in this episode, we will take a look at the other features inside this comic book, starting with the inside front cover, which was a full-page ad where you could send in to get some free British Empire stamps, as well as a free stamp collector's guide. You can send 10 cents for postage and handling to Calais, Maine, which would be 79 cents today. The first story in this issue was titled Jimmy Olsen's Super Pet. It began with Superman clearing the shipping lanes from some glaciers. And inside one glacier he was pulverizing, he discovered a huge frozen dinosaur egg inside. And so after he was done clearing the shipping lanes, he made sure to preserve the dinosaur egg while he was smashing the glaciers, and he planned to take the dinosaur egg to a zoo, but he wanted to show it to Jimmy Olsen first so he could write it up for a feature, and hopefully he could thaw the egg so that it might hatch a live dinosaur. Meanwhile, before Superman got to Jimmy's apartment, Jimmy was looking at a story inside the Daily Planet, where he read actually an ad for the Metropolis Pet Club, which was running a contest for the most unusual pet, and the prize was $10,000. But unfortunately, Jimmy Olsen had no pet. Now, today, that $10,000 in 1957 would be worth $79,412.68, which would still be quite, well, $10,000 would be nice, but $79,000 would be even better for having the most unusual pet. And the Daily Planet had a price of 5 cents, which would be 40 cents today, which is still a bargain because most newspapers are at least 50 cents. Now, once Superman got to Jimmy's, he used his hands to rub the egg with super friction, gently of course, so that it was able to thaw. And sure enough, the egg did hatch, and Jimmy named the baby dinosaur Danny the Dinosaur. Well, Jimmy's excitement for having a new pet wore off when he had to feed a very hungry baby dinosaur, starting off with a 7-decker sandwich and 100 eggs. And in the next morning, when Jimmy walked his dinosaur, I wish I had the music to the 80s hit Walk the Dinosaur, but maybe it's better I didn't. When Jimmy was walking his dinosaur the next morning, well, it was the dinosaur who took Jimmy for a walk when the dinosaur dashed down an alley to feed off the trash in some of the garbage cans. Well, Superman responded to Jimmy's calls for help and suggested that maybe Jimmy ought to give up the pet and give up the dinosaur as a pet and let it stay at the zoo. But Jimmy had visions of $10,000 dancing in his head, so he wasn't going to give up a chance to win the prize for the most unusual pet, even if it took half his paycheck to feed his pet dinosaur. Well, it took a lot more than half his paycheck to feed his dinosaur, as Danny the Dinosaur ate 26 flavors of ice cream, a couple of large milk cans, and the whole cart of a fruit and vegetable vendor. So Jimmy was broke by midweek, and so he was forced to pawn his Superman souvenirs, and even by doing that, he was down to his last dime by the next day, when he answered an ad to earn $100 to test a rocket bicycle. Well, it started out fine until all of a sudden Jimmy's trajectory took him towards a tree next to the sidewalk, and he was unable to stop or turn. But luckily, Superman had been keeping an eye out on his pal, and so just before Jimmy crashed and probably would have killed or seriously injured himself, Superman pulled the tree out of the ground and Jimmy's rocket bike flew over the hole. And luckily he was able to stop the bike, and he got his $100, but unfortunately his pet dinosaur caught the attention of the dog catcher, so that after Superman estimated the weight of the baby dinosaur at 5 tons, the $100 had to go to a pet license. And to make matters worse, Jimmy became homeless when his landlady evicted him because his pet dinosaur had smashed a hole in the outside wall of his apartment building. So that was the last straw for Jimmy. He gave up hopes for the pet prize and donated his pet dinosaur to the zoo. But Jimmy and Superman had second thoughts when Danny the Dinosaur started crying dinosaur tears at being left alone at the zoo. So the Man of Steel carried both Danny the Dinosaur and Jimmy outside Metropolis, where he built a small cabin for Jimmy and a holding pen for Danny the Dinosaur. And Superman found a field of hay which was not owned by anyone. And so he built a large scythe to harvest the hay. And so Danny the dinosaur had enough food to eat without plunging Jimmy further into bankruptcy. However, the bad news for Jimmy wasn't over, as he discovered that the pet show had been postponed for a week. Well, later, when Jimmy was trying to take Danny the dinosaur for another walk, I would have thought that Jimmy would have learned his lesson after the first time. Well, Danny smelled food and charged right through the front window of a grocery store, eating all of the food on the shelves, including the packaging. I guess he wanted to make sure he got plenty of fiber. However, that was the same day that gangsters had decided to rob the store, and after they pushed Jimmy aside when they had robbed all the money out of the safe in the store's office, well, Danny the dinosaur got even with the gangsters by grabbing the rear bumper of their getaway car and holding the car vertically until the police could arrest the gang, and Jimmy won a $10,000 reward for capturing the criminals. Not only did it allow Jimmy to reimburse the store, he was able to have enough money left over to keep Danny the dinosaur fed until the pet show. However, Danny the dinosaur still wasn't happy, and it didn't take long for Superman to be able to guess what was really wrong, and he realized and explained to Jimmy that Danny the dinosaur was lonely for other dinosaurs. And so the Man of Steel constructed a clear bubble so that he could safely carry Danny back into prehistoric times to the dinosaur era. And when Superman returned, both he and Jimmy discovered that maybe they would need to change the way they spelled Danny's name, because it turned out that it must have been a female dinosaur because it left an egg behind. And mercifully for Jimmy's sake, that's where the story ended. Now, the egg Superman discovered appeared large enough for a person to curl up inside, and it did a quick little search on the internet, and the largest dinosaur eggs ever discovered in real life were 10 inches wide, a foot long and 10 inches wide, and the space inside the egg contained enough volume to hold a half gallon of liquid, and it was roughly the size of a football. And it was a it belonged to a species of dinosaur I'd never heard of, Hypsilosaurus. I guess that's how you say the name. It was a long neck, had a long neck and tail. It was a plant eater like an Apatosaurus, or what, when I was a kid in school, it called a Brontosaurus. This Hypsilosaurus was 27 feet long and weighed about 10 tons and was kind of small for that type of dinosaur. And while this isn't a real story, you know, obviously in real life, we wouldn't expect a frozen animal to thaw in real life, much less an egg. However, there have been cases of microbes that have been revived after being frozen for thousands, if not, in a few cases, maybe millions of years. But that's an extreme case. But this is a superhero story from the Silver Age, so let's not spoil the fun of this lighthearted story. This was an exaggerated case of a hasty pet owner who was unprepared for the responsibilities of taking care of a pet. And so Jimmy was driving himself to bankruptcy, trying to keep his growing dinosaur fed in hopes of winning the prize for the most unusual pet. And Danny the dinosaur had to have a strong stomach to survive the diet Jimmy was providing. Dagwood sandwiches, fried eggs, eating out of garbage cans, ice cream, milk, and just grabbing all the food off the shelves, packaging and all. And on page 4 and 5 with the rocket bike, I had to wonder why Superman didn't just swoop down and grab Jimmy and the bike instead of ripping the tree out of the ground. And it's a good thing that there was enough of a lip of the in the hole that he made that the rocket bike was able to leap over the hole. Not that it was that the hole was that big, instead of just falling in and injuring Jimmy, even despite Superman removing the tree. You know, Jimmy was lucky the momentum carried him over the hole and he didn't crash into it. Finally, on the last page of the story, when Superman returned Danny the Dinosaur back to the era of dinosaurs, I wonder if he didn't create a time paradox. But I guess that's for a future story. You know, if Danny returned to the past as an adult, you know, how would his egg be frozen to be discovered in the 20th century? But maybe we'll see that in a future story, or maybe not. I did like the humorous punchline at the end when Superman and Jimmy discovered that Danny maybe needed to have his name spelled D-A-N-N-I instead of D-A-N-N-Y when obviously now female dinosaur left an egg behind. And if Jimmy's smart, I hope he would donate the egg to the zoo before he really would go bankrupt. And this was a good, fun, lighthearted story, so I give it 3 Superman capes out of 5. After that story, there was a full-page ad where you could win prizes at no cost for selling seeds sold by the American Seed Company of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And you could sell them for 15 cents a pack, which would be $1.19 today. After that was a full-page public service announcement titled Buzzy Learns About Careers in Nursing, written by Jack Schiff, art by Ruben Moriera, and lettered by Iris Schnapp. And after that was the second story of Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen number 20, which we will get into after a couple of more promos for some more Superman podcasts.
I couldn't believe he was really dead. I didn't know what I could say to you.
Hush, child. We know.
I was there. I watched him fight that thing. I watched him die. I didn't do anything but watch him die.
Lois, now listen. It's not your fault. You did all you could. Everyone did everything they could. Now you've got to get on with your life. We all have.
The battle is over. A hero has fallen.
Miss Lane, I monitored Superman when I arrived. I cannot pick up any brain activity at all.
As the city mourns, a family comes to grips with the loss of their son.
I keep coming back here to the North Pasture, to where he first came into our lives, to say goodbye.
His fellow heroes feel regret.
Oh, if only I could have helped him, Lex.
While his enemies see opportunity.
Well, now I'm back on top. And you can't do one blessed thing about it. You're dead. You're nothing. Metropolis is mine again. And you are an empty, lifeless, withering husk.
Worst of all, his true love has to learn to live without him.
Goodbye, Kal-El.
This January, from Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by SupermanHomepage.com and SupermanPodcastNetwork.com begin their coverage of the second part of the Death and Return of Superman trilogy. Every Thursday, you are invited to join hosts Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor as they explore how his friends, loved ones, bitter enemies, and fellow heroes deal with the loss of the Man of Steel. A city in mourning. A world without Superman. A funeral for a friend.
Thank you.
everybody. My name is Michael Bailey, and this is the trailer with a truly epic ending to my new show about Batman, appropriately titled Bailey's Batman Podcast. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a weekly program that looks at a month in the life of the Dark Knight Detective, starting with the books bearing a March 1983 cover date, which is where my solid run of the character's comics begins, and moving forward until, well, at least until the books that came out in 2005, because that's where the solid run ends. Each week, I will give you a full synopsis and review of every major ongoing Batman title, with brief stops along the way to look at the important specials, miniseries, one-shots, and Elseworld stories, just to keep things interesting. I'll also be telling you what other books Batman appeared in that month, as well as what was going on elsewhere in the DCU. It is going to be all Batman, all the time, as I look at over 20 years of the character's history. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the epic ending to this trailer. You ready? The first appearance of Jason Todd. Death in the Family. Nightfall. Epic. No Man's Land. Do you have chills yet? All of that and more will be covered on Bailey's Batman Podcast every Tuesday at baileysbatmanpodcast.com.
Before we get into the second story of Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 20, just to give you a little peek at the little man behind the curtain, I'm recording this at a little after 9 o'clock Wednesday evening. I've gotten home from work a little bit ago, and I was thinking about this first story, and one point I want to touch on again briefly is I hope I wasn't too hard on the frozen egg thaw to, you know, produce a dinosaur little plot point. I mean, reviving someone who's frozen is kind of a standard superhero plot. And, I mean, after all, if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have Captain America today. But since this is not the Captain America fan podcast, we'll move on. The second story of Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 20 was titled The Trial of Jimmy Olsen, and it began when Jimmy received a letter from Joel Todd, publisher of the Smallville News, who asked his help in raising $5,000 that Todd needed to keep the newspaper afloat. And in today's money, that $5,000 in 1957 would equal $39,706.34 today. However, Superman was in space at the moment, smashing some meteors that were on a trajectory for Earth. However, Jimmy wasn't going to use that as an excuse not to lend a helping hand. Only, he would sell some of his Superman souvenirs, except they were on loan for a charity drive. That is, we can assume that he retrieved them from the pawn shop after the end of the first story in this issue. He got the idea to use some Superboy souvenirs in Smallville to raise money for the newspaper, and so he got Perry White's okay to travel to Smallville. And once he got into town, Jimmy went door to door, appealing for help, and at one house, the lady donated a rocking horse that was big enough for six children, which, in years past, Superboy built for their now-grown children at a time when the family was too poor to be able to afford Christmas presents. And so, obviously, that was a valuable keepsake for the family. But the lady was willing to part with it to help a worthy cause of helping keep the hometown newspaper afloat. Meanwhile, Superman returned to Earth with some peculiar meteors that he was going to give some scientists to study. And when the Man of Steel found out about Jimmy's mission in Smallville, he immediately flew there to help. And a very appreciative Jimmy asked Superman to pick up the pledged souvenirs and deliver them to the auction shop. Jimmy saved half of a broken rope, which was the other half was among the souvenirs going to be auctioned. And the rope came from a time when Superboy played tug of war with a locomotive, and the rope broke in half. Superman rounded up the donations, and he estimated that they would easily bring in the needed $5,000. Well, the auction began with a. And the first item that was up for bid was a prism Superboy made to replace some broken equipment in the science lab. And one artifact from Smallville was not from when the Man of Steel was Superboy, but just a month prior when the Man of Steel captured some crooks in his old hometown, and he caught them in their hideout. And when they were trying to shoot him with their guns, Superman deflected the bullets to spell out on a metal door, "You can't beat the law." And the part of the door with the bullets hit in spelling out the phrase was cut out and kept as a souvenir. However, later, the citizens who had bought metal souvenirs after they got home and took their items that they had bought out of the boxes, the metal souvenirs crumbled to dust. And we saw a bent steel bar, a dagger, a bronze bust of Superboy, and a giant needle. So Jimmy Olsen was arrested, and at the pre-trial hearing, where formal charges would it would be decided if formal charges would be taken out on Jimmy, he was accused of selling bogus souvenirs, and of course pled not guilty. On the witness stand, he was accused by the prosecutor of keeping some of the original souvenirs to sell them in order to keep the money. And the prosecutor held up the other half of the rope, which had been found among his belongings in his hotel room. Well, Jimmy knew he was in very deep trouble, and he used a signal watch to summon Superman, who was sworn in as a witness for Jimmy, although he wasn't able to give much help because he did have to concede the prosecutor's point that it would be possible between the time that Superman collected the souvenirs and the time of the auction that it would have been enough time for Jimmy to have switched the souvenirs with fakes. Jimmy was held in jail until charges were pressed against him by the Smallville mayor and bail could be set. Well, Superman was baffled by this mystery because he knew that his pal was not guilty and wouldn't do any such thing until he decided to do some investigating and noticed that all of the affected souvenirs were metal, and the remaining non-metallic souvenirs were still intact. And then they gave a valuable clue to Superman, and Superman left Smallville and returned with an iron meteor from his recent mission, and he presented it to the mayor, and when he examined it, the meteorite crumbled to dust from rust. And so Superman informed him that he was advised by astronomers that the meteors had passed through a cloud of acidic vapor, and the vapor cloud had drifted to Earth, and Superman happened to fly through that cloud when he was taking the souvenirs to the auction shop, and he had smelled an unusual strong odor. And so that was how the metallic souvenirs were affected and were caused to crumble by the acidic cloud. So the Man of Steel was able to clear Jimmy's name and to compensate the customers whose original souvenirs had lost, he recreated the souvenirs. He duplicated them to reimburse the buyers. And the money that was raised by the auction was able to still go to Joel Todd, the publisher of the Smallville News, and later Jimmy received a trophy after he returned to Metropolis, which was inscribed to Jimmy Olsen, Honorary Pal of Superboy. And for his help, publisher Todd gave Jimmy a trophy, which was inscribed to Jimmy Olsen, Honorary Pal of Superboy. Now, this story took a number of unexpected twists. It began as a story about Jimmy Olsen lending a helping hand in Superman's old hometown to keep the hometown newspaper from going out of business. And it became a crime and courtroom drama as Jimmy Olsen was accused of swindling, as well as a mystery when Superman did some detective work to prove what actually caused the metallic souvenirs to crumble and ultimately prove Jimmy's innocence. The story did a good job of planting the clues that the Man of Steel revealed at the end. And although with the revelation about the acidic cloud from space descending to Earth and penetrating the atmosphere was a bit of an overcomplicated plot, which was not uncommon in the Silver Age and is certainly not uncommon in today's comic books. One thing I had to wonder is how such an acidic cloud, if it was able to penetrate the atmosphere, what type of ecological damage it would cause, not to mention the threat to the public health it would be. And when Jimmy saved the other half of Superboy's rope from the tug-of-war with the locomotive for himself, it wound up backfiring, and it certainly didn't look good at the hearing. I did enjoy the story. It had several plot twists that I didn't expect, so I give it 3 Superman capes out of 5. I might have even given it 4 Superman capes, except I did knock off a point for the overcomplicated plot device of the acid cloud from space. Well, after this story, there was a page with 2 half-page ads. The top ad was for an automatic firing BB gun, which you could buy for $1, which would be $7.94 today. And it also came with some military toy vehicles, which I assume you could use as targets, and it also had a 10-day free trial. And the bottom half of the page was an ad for a secret camera, which is only 2 inches by 1 1/4 inches. And you could mail the coupon along with $1.98, which was $15.72. And you can mail both coupons to Lynbrook, New York. After that was a full-page humor strip, High Wire, by Henry Boltonoff, about High Wire performing a high wire act blindfolded because he was afraid of heights. After that was a full-page text piece titled Home of the Cowboy, which was a history of the cowboy and how the name came to be. And the author of this one-page text piece is unknown. After that was a two-thirds humor strip for Shorty by Henry Boltonoff, where Shorty let a man stand on his back so that he could reach the clock on top of a pole, which Shorty thought he was there to repair the clock, but the man only needed to get close enough to be able to see the time because he had left his glasses at home. And at the bottom of the page was a one-third of the page house ad for DC, announcing that the complete list of winners from their 5,000 prize slogan contest would appear on the issues on sale in March. And we will get there in a couple of episodes.
Rocketed as a baby from the exploding planet Krypton, Kal-El grew to manhood on Earth, whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave him fantastic superpowers. In the city of Metropolis, he poses as TV newsman Clark Kent, but battles evil all over Earth and beyond as Superman. Superman in the Bronze Age is a weekly podcast following the adventures of Superman from 1970 to the Byrne reboot in 1986. Follow along at supermaninthebronzeage.blogspot.com.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
We've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happened to you. You are changing.
Oh, Reed, not you too.
What happened to me? To all of us?
I can fly.
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power.
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth. And half mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream, they're the palms in the hands. I'm Dr. Doom.
The Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you, for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more.
You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatots, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak, blind or whole.
Stop! You must not enter the castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speak, Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four from the very beginning. Witness the origins of a legend. The Fantasticast. ffcast.libsyn.com.
The third and final story of the issue, which was featured on the cover, was titled The Merman of Metropolis. And it began with Jimmy, who had gone fishing on his day off. He was in a boat, and he had gotten a bite, but it must have been pretty big because whatever it was pulled him into the water. And Jimmy realized that he had hooked a mermaid who gave him a magic ring but promised to keep her existence a secret. The magic ring enabled him, as Jimmy discovered, to breathe underwater, and he swam back to his boat. Then he noticed some strange markings on the palm of his left hand. And when jewel thieves went by in a speedboat trying to elude police who were chasing them in a police boat, the thieves dumped the loot from their jewelry robbery into the water. Jimmy immediately dove into the water and swam to the bottom to gather the jewels and was met by a surprised Superman. And Jimmy kept his promise that he'd made to the mermaid and kept her secret and how he was able to breathe underwater from Superman. Back at the Daily Planet, Jimmy was found that he was unable to remove the strange markings with cleaning fluid. And when Perry returned from the trip, he thought the headline was very fishy to Jimmy's story about becoming a merman and retrieving the jewels. But Jimmy told Perry that Superman would back up his story, and apparently that was good enough for Perry. Well, the next day, Jimmy put on a merman costume complete with flippers. However, he found that his mirror had somehow cracked. But he went on to perform some underwater feats. He rescued a deep-sea diver whose hose had tangled on some debris on the seafloor. He netted a shark for an aquarium and took a picture of a rare deep-sea fish. And to aid a charity drive, Jimmy would spend an unusually long length of time underwater in a large fish tank. But apparently unknown to Jimmy, Superman was, and apparently unknown to the audience as well, Superman, from above the top of the fish tank, extended an invisible tube which supplied Jimmy with air and created a continuous air bubble around Jimmy's nose and mouth so Jimmy would not drown. And in a flashback, we learned that the mermaid that Jimmy encountered was actually a puppet operated by the Man of Steel, who used superventriloquism underwater to make the merpuppet seem to talk. And although it doesn't explain how, we also learned that Superman used various tricks to make it seem that Jimmy accomplished these underwater tricks while able to breathe underwater. And when Superman noticed Jimmy about to comb his hair and kind of look in the mirror, the Man of Steel used his X-ray vision to heat up the mirror to cause it to crack as well. So we can assume that Superman was responsible for breaking the mirror in Jimmy's apartment. And for some reason, the Man of Steel needed to keep Jimmy from seeing his reflection in the mirror. And the next morning, Jimmy responded to a report of a submarine sinking as Merman Olsen. But before Clark could follow as Superman, Perry assigned him and Lois both to cover the story. And so Clark was stuck flying the Daily Planet's Flying Newsroom helicopter to the site of the underwater disaster, where Jimmy dove into the ocean and Clark followed his progress as with his X-ray vision. And also, he used his super breath without anyone noticing, especially Jimmy, to blow Jimmy a little faster so that he would get to the sub before he would need to take another breath. Jimmy was able to open the emergency hatch and allowed the crew to swim to the surface and to allow Jimmy to resurface without needing to, before he drowned. Clark used his X-ray vision to burst an oxygen tank, and so Jimmy surfaced inside a giant bubble of oxygen. And as Clark helped Jimmy aboard the Flying Newsroom helicopter, which had landed on its pontoons and floated in the water, Clark noticed that there was no more reason for Jimmy to masquerade as a merman. Later, Superman found Jimmy on the dock, who was about to use a map to search for underwater treasure, and the Man of Steel informed Jimmy that he was never a merman, and the Man of Steel informed his pal how he had made it seem as if Jimmy was able to breathe underwater for a very important reason which he couldn't reveal because it would expose his secret identity. However, we are shown in a couple of flashback panels the real reason. Superman had been asked by some organizers of a time capsule which would be opened in the year 4900 AD to submit a sealed envelope which would where Superman would write inside of which would be a note where Superman would reveal what his secret identity was. And Clark made the mistake of writing this note in the Daily Planet office. Well, Jimmy had come up to Clark to ask him where some good fishing spots were, and put the palm of his left hand right down on top of the note before the special archival ink could dry. And that explained the strange markings on his hand that would not could not be removed by cleaning fluid. And Clark knew that only the corrosive effects of salt water could remove the ink from Jimmy's hand. And that was why he had come up with the elaborate hoax to make Jimmy believe he was a merman, to spend enough time in salt water to allow the salt in the ocean water to dissolve the writing on his hand. And on page 3, we can easily read the markings on Jimmy's palm, and it was written, obviously, on his hand, it would appear backwards. It said, Clark Kent was Superman's other identity. And as I said at the beginning of this episode, that the cover featured this story, and it was a cool scene. It showed Jimmy in a fish tank, and inside the tank, he was accompanied by a man in a deep-sea diving outfit with a big metal helmet and the air hose, and they were playing chess or checkers. It was a cool scene. It's too bad that the story didn't live up to the potential on the cover. If the superhero crime-fighting business doesn't work out for Superman, I think he would have made a big hit as a puppeteer, especially with his trick of using ventriloquism, super ventriloquism, underwater. As a boy in the mid-60s, I would probably think this story was cool, but as an adult, not so much. As we read more of these stories where Superman has to play tricks on his closest friends for whatever reason, I'm liking them less and less, and especially with this one. It's never explained, as I said, how Superman allowed Jimmy to accomplish his deep-sea dives, much less keep from getting the bends. I would think when Jimmy was in the tank, when Superman had the hose that was so thin and made of the pure glass or whatever, plastic, that it would be invisible. But it seemed that the bubble around his nose and mouth would be visible to anyone in the audience. It was a typical Silver Age plot trope of kind of an overcomplicated plot for Superman to accomplish a goal, but I guess writing for a younger audience, it seems that sometimes the writers, I'm just conjecturing, maybe the writers try to top themselves with something unusual, and in this instance especially, it seemed to fall flat. You know, I try not to take a modern perspective with these stories, but I have to be honest, this story today, it doesn't really appeal to me. If I were Jimmy, I wouldn't feel very good about being manipulated by Superman unless I knew him very, very well, as it seems Jimmy does, well, except for his secret identity, and would trust his pal not to exploit him for no good reason. And I have to give the story 1 Superman cape out of 5. I can't quite give it a 0 because, unlike the story A Jungle of Jimmy Olsen, where it seemed like Clark mistreated Jimmy for no good reason, at least in this story, Superman and Clark was trying to protect his secret identity. Well, in the back of this issue, first we have a full-page ad for 100 toy soldiers in their own Foot Locker, which was sold by the Jocelyn Company of New York, New York. And I believe it was, I forgot to write the price down, I believe it was for $1.25. We also, next we see another full-page ad, which is familiar one from the Stevens Credit Sales of Nashville, Tennessee, where he could earn money selling religious or patriotic slogans on cards. Afterwards, another full-page ad, which was we've seen before, which was a fitness ad with a bonus book, Fight Secrets by Joe Lewis, from the National Sports Council of New York, New York. And on the back cover was a full-page ad, which had Mickey Mantle as a spokesman for the Junior Sales Club, where you could sell cards for all occasions for lots of prizes, and you could send the coupon in to Springfield, Massachusetts. And that finishes up Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen number 20. After a couple more promos for some comic book podcasts, we'll take a look at Elsewhere in DC Comics, which carried the April or April-May 1957 cover date.
In a world where planets die,
I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Where good and evil fight a never-ending battle.
But millions of people will die.
Billions! Once again, the press underestimates me.
One man will become a hero.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. And they protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
One man will rise to the challenge.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
One man will wear spandex.
Well, one thing's for sure, nobody's going to be looking at your face.
Mom?
Well, they don't call them tights for nothing.
Presenting The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a podcast looking at the Man of Steel's history via his earliest adventures in comics, radio, and film. Featuring reviews, commentary, creator spotlights, and more. Join the adventure at GreatKrypton.com.
Lansers, I've called you here to this unprecedented gathering because we face an unprecedented danger. An enemy we don't yet fully understand. Moment that we were created, but I don't need to tell you your duty. I don't need to tell you who we are.
Chosen by the Mystic Guardians of the Universe.
Recruited from across the galaxy for their bravery and courage.
The best and brightest join to fulfill a solemn oath.
In brightest day.
In blackest night.
No evil shall escape my sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware my power.
Green Lantern's Light.
Green Lantern's Light, a monthly podcast covering the adventures of Hal Jordan, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, and the entire Green Lantern Corps from 1984 through today.
Say the oath. Join the Corps.
Green Lantern's Light. Available monthly at greenlanternslight.com.
You are cordially invited to attend a podcast that observes the unfolding events of history. Come with me and observe the birth and growth of a legend. from the pages of a 10-cent pulp comic book to the newspapers, radio program adventures, theatrical films, and more. Witness the dawn of the superhero. Golden Age Superman. Available on iTunes and at goldenagesuperman.libsyn.com. Every legend has a beginning.
Elsewhere in DC Comics, there were 34 titles which carried the April or April-May 1957 cover dates. So it was a big month for DC. As always, most of the dates are approximate since complete records are not available during this era. And we begin around February 5th of 1957. And the first title of this month is Jackie Gleason and the Honeymooners, the April-May issue, issue number 6, and there would be 6 more issues in this title, which was based on the famous actor and comedian, and the classic, although brief, comedy series from the 1950s. And I hope to one day get a box set of the complete series. It didn't last as long as I Love Lucy, but I think it's just as good of a comedy series. And in this issue, along with the Honeymooners, there were 2 stories which starred Jackie Gleason's character Charlie Bratton the Loudmouth, as well as another story featuring his character Reggie Van Gleason III. Also published that week, Our Army at War, number 57, edited by Robert Coninger. It featured the 4th and final story of the issue on the cover, Silent Gun. And finally that week, the April-May issue of Secret Hearts, number 39, which also featured the 4th and final story on the cover, Love is a Riddle. It certainly is. Published around February 7th, The Adventures of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, number 36. And this is the same title which, when we look at the Elsewhere in DC Comics, during the Superman, when we cover the Superman and Action Comics issues, this is the same series as Jerry Lewis. When this title began, I think I've mentioned this before, but when this title began, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis were an entertainment duo. Dean Martin was a straight man, and Jerry Lewis was the comedian. After their act split up, then the series continued with just Jerry Lewis. Also that week, the April-May issue of A Date with Judy, number 58, as well as House of Mystery, number 61, edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the 4th and final story on the cover, The Thing in the Box. Also that week, the April-May issue of Peter Porkchop's, number 49, which also featured a story starring Dizzy Dog. And finally that week, Wonder Woman, number 89, edited by Robert Coninger, which featured all three Wonder Woman stories on the cover. They were in a different order on the cover, but in order of how they appeared in the issue, the Master of Earth's Twin Worlds, the Amazon Album, and the Triple Heroine. Heroine as H-E-R-O-I-N-E, not the drug. Published around February 12th, Blackhawk number 111, edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the issue's 3rd and final story on the cover, Trigger Craig's Magic Carpet. Also that week, the April-May issue of Girls' Romances, number 44, which featured the issue's 4th and final story on the cover, The Ring of Broken Dreams. And finally, Real Screen Comics, number 109. And This issue featured three stories starring Fox and the Crow, as well as one each starring Flippity and Flop, and finally Tito and his burrito. And I don't think you'd get away with that character nowadays, although I've never read a story starring Tito and his burrito. Published around February 14th, the April-May issue of Gangbusters number 57, edited by Jack Schiff, based on the popular radio and TV series of the 1950s, which featured the fourth and final story in the cover, Secrets of the Test Squad. And this series would last for 10 more issues. Also that week, the April-May issue of Heartthrobs number 47, which featured the issue's fourth and final story in the cover, Johnny's Back in Town. And finally that week, Our Fighting Forces number 20, which featured the issue's first of four stories in the cover, The Floating Pilot. Published around February 19th, the April-May issue of The Adventures of Bob Hope number 44, Mutt and Jeff number 94, which would be around for nine more issues, and this series was based on the classic comic strip of the era. Also that week, the April-May issue of Peter Panda, number 23, which also featured a story starring Stanley the Timid Scarecrow. And in the 1960s, I think Sugar and Spike, that series would end where they would co-star with Stanley and his monster. I wonder if someone used the idea of Stanley the Scarecrow and took it to make the Stanley the Monster character in the next decade, but who knows. Also that week, the April-May issue of Sugar and Spike number 7, speaking of which, Superboy number 56, which featured a crypto story, A Job for Crypto, and finally that week, Tales of the Unexpected number 12, which featured the issue's fourth and final story in the cover, The Indestructible Man. And no, they're not talking about the Man of Steel, Superman. Published around February 21st, along with Superman's pal Jim Olsen number 20, All-American Men of War number 44, edited by Robert Conniger, and with a cover drawn by Joe Kubert. This issue featured the first of four stories on the cover, The Flying Frogman. And also that week, Batman number 107, edited by Jack Schiff, which featured the third and final story on the cover, The Grown-Up Boy Wonder. Also that week, The Fox and the Crow number 40, which also featured a story starring Twiddle and Twaddle. And I'm not sure who those characters were, or if they were humorous people or whether anthropomorphic animals. But anyway, also that week, G.I. Combat number 47, which featured the issue's fourth and final story on the cover, Tank Busters. Also that week, Mystery in Space number 37, the April-May issue, edited by Julius Schwartz, which featured the issue's first of four stories on the cover, Secret of the Masked Martian. And in this issue was also the 14th Space Cabby story, One Way Ride to Eternity. Published around the week of February 26th, the April-May issue of All-Star Western number 94, edited by Julius Schwartz, which featured the Trigger Twins in The Code of the Trigger Twins. And the other three stories starred Strongbow, Foley of the Fighting Fifth, and Johnny Thunder. And also that week, the April-May issue of Flippity and Flop number 33, which also starred a story with Twiddle and Twaddle. Star-Spangled War Stories number 56, edited by Robert Conniger, and also with a cover drawn by Joe Kubert, which featured the first of four stories on the cover, The Walking Sub. You know, this was kind of a theme with some of the war comics. You had The Floating Pilot, The Flying Frogman, and now The Walking Sub. Well, finally, wrapping up this month, published around February 28th, Action Comics number 227, which featured Superman in a story titled The Man with the Triple X-Ray Eyes. And judging by the cover, it appears that it's talking about Superman. This issue also featured stories starring Congo Bill and Tommy Tomorrow. Also this week, Adventure Comics number 235 with the story titled The Confession of Superboy. And Aquaman and Green Arrow also starred in backup stories in this issue. Also this week, the April-May issue of The Brave and the Bold number 11, edited by Robert Conniger, which featured Robin Hood in Robin Hood versus the Merry Men. And it also featured stories starring Viking Prince and Silent Night. Also this week, Detective Comics number 242, edited by Jack Schiff, in a story titled The Underworld Batcave. And Roy Raymond and Martian Manhunter also starred in their own stories in the back of this issue. And finally this month, Strange Adventures number 79, edited by Julia Schwartz, and it featured the first of the issue's four stories on the cover, Invaders from the Ice World, and the cover featured some very angry-looking snowmen. Next episode, we will feature the Superman comic book, cover dated June 1960, Action Comics number 265, and in 2 weeks, we will feature the Superman Family comic book, cover dated May-June 1957, World's Finest Comics number 88, and maybe we will learn results of the 5,000 prize slogan contest. This concludes another episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. The home website is thesupermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com. Episodes are also available on iTunes and most other podcast aggregators, as well as supermanfanpodcast.wordpress.com and the Internet Archive at archive.org. Your emails are always welcome at supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com, and I look forward to reading them. The Superman Fan Podcast is a proud member of the following: the League of Comic Book Podcasters at comicbooknoise.com/league, the Comics Podcast Network at comicspodcasts.com, the Superman Web Ring of Websites, and the Superman Podcast Network, which you can find at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com, where you can find podcasts covering every era of the Man of Steel from the Golden Age to today. The theme music for this podcast is titled Plans in Motion, composed by Kevin MacLeod, part of the royalty-free music library at incompetech.com. You can join the Superman Fan Podcast group and page on Facebook, and follow the podcast on Twitter at Superman Podcast. Superman and all related characters and images are trademark and copyright of DC Comics. Any artwork displayed with the show notes is for entertainment purposes only. I make no claim of ownership to the images shown, nor do I earn any money or profit from this podcast. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. Join me next week as together we'll crash through the time barrier to fly into the past and explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape. As always, thanks to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, creators of Superman.